Welcome to your weekly Oxstock edition for Tuesday, the 28th of April, 2026. My name is Avshalom Gissin, and I am compiling the edition for this week. News items have been selected and read by Hazel Hobbs and Christine Churchill, with special bonus contents from David Brassington to follow. We have a great mix of news and transport service updates, local curio, science, culture, and sports. Sunrise times this week will range from 5:42 to 5:30, and sunsets from 8:24 to 8:33. And now to the news. Enjoy!
A walkway in Botley Road, close to Oxford Railway Station, may not be completed before the road reopens, it has emerged. The road was closed at the rail bridge on April the 11th, 2023, for network rail work linked with a major revamp at the station. So far, the three-year closure has cost £237 million, and although a new rail bridge has been installed, no major work has started on providing a new Platform 5 to boost east-west rail links or to create a new western entrance for the station. Network Rail said the road is on schedule to reopen by the end of August, but there is doubt over whether it can complete the work to provide two new walkways, one each side of the Botley Road close to the rail bridge. During the road closure, pedestrians have had to endure a series of temporary walkways with an early version nicknamed the Tunnel of Doom. While the walkway on the southern side of the road next to the Westgate Hotel will open on time, it is likely the northern walkway will not. A Network Rail spokesperson said, "We remain on track to reopen Botley Road by August the 31st. When the road reopens, the southern pedestrian walkway will be available for use. We are reviewing the timeline for completion of the northern walkway. While we continue to explore whether the northern walkway can be completed at the same time, our priority remains reopening the road and one pedestrian route in August." Labour City Councillor Susanna Pressel said the expected delay is disappointing and regrettable, and added, "Towards the end of the last meeting for residents on March 24th, Network Rail dropped a bit of a bombshell. They suddenly said the northern walkway won't be ready until probably the second week of September. Already in June or July, we will have a lovely new southern walkway in its finished state, and we will all be using that. It will be wide and airy, and it will have clear demarcation for cyclists. Until the road is open, the southern walkway will have to take pedestrians and cyclists going both ways, so I assume we will have marshals to enforce the rule that cyclists have to dismount. I hope most cyclists will use the road as soon as it has reopened at the end of August." Former County Councillor John Howson, who lives near the rail station, said Network Rail should have made completing both walkways a greater priority. He added, "I don't think it is good enough. The whole scheme should be handed back to the County Council by August the 31st, and that includes both walkways." A city road is to have its speed limit slashed from 60 miles per hour to 20 miles per hour under recommended plans being put to the Oxford County Council. The existing 20 mile per hour limit for Old Road in Headington in Oxford was introduced in July 2023, following calls made by the County Councillor. But plans have been put forward to Transport Chief Andrew Gant for part of the road across from the Ring Road and into Forest Hill to be reduced from the national speed limit. The lane would be reduced from 60 miles per hour down to 20 miles per hour just past the junction with the Ridings to the Shotover Hill car park, a distance of about half a mile. Emily Kerr, the County Council's active travel champion, has urged Mr. Gant to approve the speed limit reduction and said it will improve safety for pedestrians, cyclists and horse riders. I am particularly keen to see 20 mile per hour in a place where I myself use regularly with my children when accessing Shotover by bike or on foot, as thousands of other people do, she added. Oxfordshire County Council had consulted on the speed limit reduction earlier this year, garnering one letter of objection and eight in support. The nameless objection of Green Lane in Uffington near Farringdon said, "The nature of the road is sufficient to make it obvious to drivers that a lower speed limit is appropriate. There is no need to spend any money here." He added, "The proposal contradicts the County Council on introducing 20 mile per hour restrictions, which states that the existing speed restriction must not be more than 40 miles per hour." Responding to the objection, the County Council's Director of Highways, Paul Firmer, said, "While the approved criteria for the 20 mile per hour project include that 20 mile per hour limits should only be considered for roads where the current speed limit is 40 miles per hour or less, there are a number of precedents of departures from this approach where considered appropriate, as is the case here, taking account of the detailed specific site circumstances. In recent years, Oxfordshire County Council has been imposing 20 mile per hour limits on many roads, including previously 30 mile per hour main roads through large towns. In February 2022, Cabinet approved funding of up to £8 million to deliver 20 mile per hour schemes across the county for town and parish councils. The authority says that 20 mile per hour roads make our built environment safer and more attractive places to walk and cycle. Furthermore, 20 mile per hour speed limits will help reduce casualty rates and improve road safety," the council added. Mr. Gant, Cabinet Minister for Transport Management, will make a final decision on the reduction from 60 mile per hour to 20 mile per hour of old road at a meeting on Thursday, April the 23rd.
Six rubbish tips across Oxfordshire are set to temporarily close next month, Oxford County Council has announced. People planning to use the county's household waste recycling centres have been warned of a series of short closures in May and June. This is to enable essential work to be carried out, and Oxfordshire County Council will be shutting the centres for 2 days, although never at the same time. Deep cleaning and essential maintenance will take place, including jet washing sites and structures, repainting lines and safety areas, and other general work. The closing dates are May the 7th and 8th for Oakley Wood near Wallingford. For Olkerton near Banbury, the centre will be closed on May the 11th and 12th. Ardley near Bicester will be shut on May the 14th and 15th, while Drayton near Abingdon will close on May the 21st and 22nd. Stamford in the Vale near Farringdon will shut on May the 18th and 19th, and Dix Pit, Stanton Harcourt, on June the 2nd and 3rd. All closures are on quieter weekdays to minimise disruption, and sites will reopen at 8 a.m. the following day. The deep clean for Redbridge in Oxford will be carried out later in the year, and full details will be provided in due course. Redbridge is also due to close for around 3 months in the summer for essential safety work.
Oxfordshire has been crowned the best county of its kind in England for recycling for the 12th year in a row. According to the latest government figures published last month, 56.6% of household waste was recycled, reused or composted in 2024-2025 out of a total of 292,738 tonnes of waste. Of that, 165,694 tonnes were successfully diverted from landfill through recycling, reuse and composting. Vicky Beachy, manager of Oxfordshire Resources and Waste Partnership, ORWP, said, "The sustained high performance collectively by Oxfordshire councils is notable, particularly against the backdrop of challenging financial times for everyone. To see ORWP partners and Oxfordshire residents' hard work continuing to be reflected in these figures is testament to the commitment of everyone to deliver positive environmental outcomes. Our residents deserve congratulations and thanks for all their consistent hard work and commitment in achieving this landmark. However, we are certainly not complacent, and one area we would like to improve is reducing food waste. In England's two-tier system, county councils are responsible for waste disposal, while city and district councils manage curbside collections. All of Oxfordshire's councils placed highly in the national rankings. South Oxfordshire District Council ranked second out of 197 waste collection authorities, recycling 61.3% of waste. Vale of Wight Horse came eighth with 58.9%, West Oxfordshire 16th with 57%, Charwell 37th with 51.5%, and Oxford City Council 51st with 48.2%. Ms. Beachy said, "ORWP partners recognise that there is more to do to improve reuse, repair, recycling and composting figures. We can take all positive action through reducing food waste, keeping items in use for longer and reducing the amount of waste we produce for the benefit of everyone." Ms. Beachy said, "Using tools such as the Waste Wizard can really help put the items we have in the right place, whether that's for reuse, composting, or throw away." Residents visiting any of Oxfordshire's 7 household waste recycling centres are reminded that a booking system is now in place. Bookings can be made up to 2 weeks in advance, or as little as 30 minutes before your visit, via the Oxfordshire County Council website. Residents without internet access can book slots over the telephone by contacting the Council's Customer Service Centre on 01865 519 800 between 8:45 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday to Thursday and 8:45 to 4 p.m. on Fridays. Proof of address is required on arrival. This includes things such as a driving licence or recent utility or council tax bill. Visitors from outside of the county will be charged £15. Swapping out just one meat dish can nudge diners towards healthier, greener choices and reduce carbon emissions, a study has found. Researchers at the University of Oxford found simple menu tweaks can make a big difference in workplace cafeterias. The study replaced one meat-based lunch option with a vegetarian alternative in 6 English workplaces and recorded results over 7 weeks and more than 26,000 meals. The likelihood of a customer choosing a vegetarian meal rose by 41%. Dr. Eliza Becker, lead author and postdoctoral researcher at Oxford's Nuffield Department of Primary Care Health Sciences, said, "The findings show that small changes to food environments can have a big effect without requiring customers to make extra effort, read labels, or use self-control. Instead of placing the burden on customers, we found that simple offering more options that are better for health and the environment shifts eating behaviour in a healthier and more sustainable direction." The study, published in the International Journal of Behavioural Nutrition and Physical Activity, also found that the vegetarian options reduce calories, saturated fat, and salt. Meals during the trial averaged 26 fewer calories and produced 8.5% less greenhouse gas emissions. Customer feedback indicated the change was largely unnoticed. The study suggests this approach could inform future workplace food policies. Researchers now hope to run similar trials in other industries. High levels of cancer-causing chemicals have been found in water near where up to 13,000 homes could be built in Oxfordshire. A former air base earmarked for a major housing development is under scrutiny due to high levels of per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, PFAS, forever chemicals. These chemicals, which do not break down in the environment, accumulate in the body and are linked to cancers, thyroid disease and fertility problems. Tests conducted by the British Geological Survey, UK Centre for Ecology and Hydrology and the Environment Agency indicated elevated levels in the surface water at the Lees Farm Ditch test site, a tributary of Gallus Brook, which is around 4 kilometres away from RAF Upper Heyford. The total PFAS concentrations in surface water reached up to 2,021 nanograms per litre of PFAS, the highest of the 700 sites tested, exceeding drinking water limits by 20-fold. Key compounds found at the site include PFOA, a Category 1 carcinogen, PFOS, PFHSX and fluorotelomosulfonates, which are commonly associated with firefighting foams, which would have been used there when the site was operational from 1981 to 1994. Despite this, development on the former site is already underway, with 1,200 of a proposed 13,000 homes built over the past 15 years as part of a £5 billion project led by Dorchester Living. While housing plans have since been reduced, with 9,000 of the homes removed from the government's new town scheme, this could still be built if approved by the local planning authority. A strategic environmental assessment carried out by the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government about the former new town raised concerns about the proposals. In it, the Environment Agency suggested adding reference to the opportunity to remediate historic contamination where PFAS and other emerging contaminants of concern might be present. Paul Silver, CEO of Dorchester Living, said, "The brownfield regeneration site has already had extensive remediation works completed, including digging over 70 boreholes on site and testing contamination in groundwater and soils using a methodology agreed with the Environment Agency and Charwell District Council. As with many airfields, the historic use of the site means there is potential for legacy contamination. This is not unique to Heyford Park and has already been identified in the site's environmental assessments and ground conditions studies. These reports confirm that further targeted investigation is appropriate in specific areas. This is standard for the regeneration of brownfield sites. The regeneration of Heyford Park through a controlled and regulated planning process offers far greater environmental protection than leaving the land unmanaged or undeveloped." Campaigners have urged the government to be better prepared for another pandemic as the inquiry into COVID-19 is due to publish its latest report. A YouGov poll has revealed that 7 in 10 NHS workers believe the health service is poorly prepared for another pandemic. None of the 1,006 NHS workers surveyed said they believe the service is very well prepared. Nicola Brooke, a solicitor representing more than 7,000 families from the COVID-19 Bereaved Families for Justice UK, said, "Despite living through the horrors of the pandemic, we find ourselves in the unbelievable situation of being less equipped as a nation to make vaccines today than we were at the start of the pandemic. We call on the chair to recognise this disaster and to demand the government works towards improving our readiness in vaccines and therapeutics now and not when the next pandemic hits." The UK COVID-19 Public Inquiry is to publish its fourth report on vaccines and drugs during the crisis. As the virus spread across the world in early 2020, hospitals were flooded with patients and, with the prospects of a vaccine a distant hope, scientists got to work looking for new drug therapies or repurposing existing treatments. The International Recovery Trial, led by academics at the University of Oxford, made a crucial breakthrough identifying dexamethasone as an effective treatment, the first proven treatment to reduce coronavirus deaths. Experts said the finding in June 2020 was critical to the pandemic response, and it was suggested that in the first 9 months after the finding, the cheap and widely available steroid drug saved more than 1 million lives around the world. Scientists also joined a race to find an effective vaccine against the disease, seen by many as the way out of the crisis. The UK deployed a vaccine task force to find the most promising vaccines and pre-order them for speedy development once approved by regulators. In November 2020, Pfizer BioNTech announced that its COVID-19 vaccine was both safe and effective, swiftly followed by a similar announcement about the Moderna jab. Days later, the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine was also announced to be effective at protecting against the disease. Regulators worked in tandem with scientists so the jabs could be approved as quickly as possible. On December 8, 2020, a grandmother, Margaret Keenan, then 90, became the first person in the world to be given a COVID-19 jab outside of a clinical trial, as she received the Pfizer-BioNTech jab in Coventry. The Oxford jab was approved for use on December 30th, 2020, hailed as a massive step forward in our fight against coronavirus by then-Health Secretary Matt Hancock. The inquiry will publish its fourth report on Thursday. The County Council has been urged to apply for government funding to repair bridges in Oxford. The government has opened a new fund for councils to fix neglected infrastructure around the UK. Donington Bridge is in need of around £4 million worth of repair work, having been closed to buses in 2024. And a major project to replace the ageing Kennington Rail Bridge is being delayed due to a massive £71 million funding shortfall. Oxford Labour said some of the city's bridges are not in good shape and welcomed the funding opportunity for Oxfordshire County Council, the Highways Authority. "We trust the County Council will be applying to this fund and stepping up their surveying and repair work," a party spokeswoman said. ISIS County Councillor Brad Bain said, "We remain extremely concerned about the ongoing uncertainty over the future of the Donington Bridge. The County Council has refused to commit to funding the reinforcement or replacement of the bridge or restoration of bus connections across it. An inspection confirmed the bridge must be repaired or replaced before full-size buses can return. Repairs could cost £4 million and take 2 years, while replacement might cost up to £30 million and take much longer." The council said feasibility work on options is due by summer, but expanding the service would unfortunately be prohibitive. Oxford resident and campaigner Siobhan Lancaster added, "Residents in South and East Oxford need certainty about the future of this vital infrastructure and this new fund could provide that. We continue to call on the County Council to provide this, apply to this fund and get the job done. Oxfordshire County Council spokesman said, "We welcome any extra money being made available for repairing structures such as this fund. Oxfordshire has many historic bridges and other infrastructure that is in need of attention, and we will look into the criteria to make sure the county gets its fair share of this money." Transport Secretary Heidi Alexander, who was a recent victim to one of Oxfordshire's potholes, said, "Crumbling bridges and worn-out flyovers have been patched up rather than properly fixed for far too long, leading to frustrating weight limits and lengthy diversions. Every closed bridge is a barrier to growth. A blocked route to work, a delayed delivery, a family unable to reach the services they depend on. Councils have known what needs fixing for years but simply haven't had the resources to act. We're changing that, making sure structures are repaired properly so people can live in properly connected communities. Funding decisions will be announced in autumn 2026.
A new bus service is set to improve travel for commuters and hospital visitors. Launching on May the 3rd, the 600 orbital route will connect Oxford's major employment sites, hospitals and city centre. It is running from Oxford Rail Station through the city centre, Abingdon Road, Redbridge Park and Ride, the Oxford Science Park, Kassam Stadium, Greater Lees, Cowley, Churchill Hospital and John Radcliffe Hospital before ending at Thornhill Park and Ride. Luke Marion, Managing Director of Oxford Bus Company, said, "This orbital service is a fantastic addition to our network, connecting several major employers in the city. It is an important link for commuters and we're delighted to have been awarded the tender. We've enhanced and improved the route and passengers should note the adjusted timetable before travelling. The updated service follows a tendering process led by Oxfordshire County Council, which awarded the contract to Oxford Bus Company. Within Cowley, the route will run along Horsepath Road, offering direct connections to Headington hospitals and nearby employment hubs. Oxford Bus Company has responded to passenger feedback by restoring stops around Churchill Hospital, including the main entrance, Sobel House and the east entrance. Buses will run every 30 minutes Monday to Saturday during the day and hourly in the evenings and on Sundays." Lisa Hoffman, Chief Estates and Facilities Officer at Oxford University Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, said, "We welcome the introduction of this enhanced bus service, which will improve connectivity to the Churchill Hospital site. Reliable and accessible public transport is hugely important for our patients, visitors and staff, helping people to get to appointments more easily and supporting our workforce to travel to and from work. Better links to our hospitals are a real positive and will help reduce car journeys while improving the overall experience for those using our services. Passengers using the 600 can also benefit from free park and ride bus travel, an offer extended until at least the end of May. Free park and ride travel was first introduced in October on a trial basis in conjunction with Oxfordshire County Council's temporary congestion charge. To claim a free return ticket, passengers must show a valid parking ticket to the driver. Up to 2 adults and 3 children are then able to claim free travel. Oxford's park and ride sites are located at Redbridge, Seacourt, Thornhill, Pear Tree and Oxford Parkway, with parking costing £2.50 for up to 16 hours.
A community bus service has been given the green light to connect Ensham through to Standlake, Whitney and North Lee. First and Last Mile, a community bus service that until recently had operated some local routes, is launching a new Saturday bus service for a 5-month trial, with services starting from Saturday, May the 2nd. Focusing on the younger population, the 611 and the 618 routes aim to provide efficient transportation to leisure facilities and activities, including Jessie's Art Shed in Incham. The initiative received official approval from Oxfordshire County Council and is being funded by the Low Carbon Hub, with the hope to secure funding on a longer-term basis. First and Last Mile, which initially started operations in January 2022, is a non-profit organisation run by volunteer drivers. The man at the helm of this operation is David Miles, who played a crucial role in the creation of West Oxfordshire Community Transport. This organisation sprang into action to maintain a connection between Witney and the Wychwoods when Oxfordshire County Council had to curtail subsidised bus services to save £3.7 million in 2016.
A driver has exposed failings in pothole repairs and drainage after winning a compensation fight with Oxfordshire County Council. The driver sustained £86.40 of damage to his vehicle when he hit a 70mm deep pothole in Blackthorn near Bicester in November. The pothole, which is outside Malvern Cottage in Station Road, was hidden under floodwater caused by blocked drains. Oxfordshire County Council has apologised for an error and the authority said steps have been taken to ensure it is not repeated. The motorist, Matthew Kitchen, said, "I was driving through Blackthorn when my car struck a massive pothole outside Malvern Cottage. It was raining, and because the council had failed to clear the drains, despite reports of them being blocked for months, the road was flooded. The water acted as a mask, making the hole a hidden trap for any unsuspecting driver." After claiming the cost of repairs, the 20-year-old received a standard rejection letter from the council, which stated it had no prior knowledge of the pothole and had met its legal obligations through routine inspections. Unconvinced, the driver made an Environmental Information Regulations, EIR, request and discovered the council had been notified of the pothole on November the 19th, 3 days before his incident. The pothole was also sent to the website Fix My Street multiple times in the run-up to Mr. Kitchen's accident. The pothole was recorded as a valid defect and later measured at 70 millimetres deep. Oxfordshire County Council policy classifies defects over 40 millimetres as a hazard requiring urgent repair. Records also showed the council had been informed of blocked drains at the same location a month earlier, but no action had been taken. Armed with this evidence, the driver challenged the council's decision, pointing out its failure to act. He said, "If I hadn't filed that FOI request, they would have got away with it. This isn't just about £60, it's about the fact that the council is using standard denials to avoid paying for damage caused by their own documented negligence." A spokesman for the council said a full claim review was undertaken and a settlement offer was made to Mr. Kitchen as an additional report was overlooked during the initial investigation. Mark Morell, otherwise known as Mr. Pothole, said the potholes in Oxfordshire are some of the worst in the country due to decades of negligence from the council. Passers-by were stunned when they spotted an Oxford couple taking their pet snakes for a walk over the weekend. Peter Mills and fiancé Charlie Wren were in Oxford High Street last week with corn snakes Mushu and Felcor and royal python Medusa. The couple from Cowley Road took the snakes out so that they could enjoy the sunshine. People walking past were visibly shocked, and one cyclist started swearing when he saw the snakes. Mr. Mills, 24, said he lives in a one-bedroom flat off Cowley Road with 15 snakes. Girlfriend Charlie, 23, from Witney, helps him to look after them. While looking after snakes is a full-time job for Mr. Mills, Ms. Wren also works as a canine hydrotherapist, using water-based exercises to improve dogs' mobility, strength, and recovery from injury. Mr. Mills said, "The snakes have been getting lots of attention. We take them out when it's warm enough. They enjoy the sunshine. Some people are shocked, but we've been getting lots of comments. But these snakes are not poisonous." A rare plane used in the Second World War is up for sale from an airstrip near Abingdon, listed for £75,000. A 1944 Piper L4H Grasshopper, registration GCMIZ, has been listed for sale on global aircraft marketplace Sprinkle. Originally built for the US Army Air Forces, the aircraft saw active service from August 1944 and is recorded as having served under General George S. Patton's Third Army during the final advance into occupied Europe. This type of light observation aircraft played a crucial role in reconnaissance and artillery spotting during the Second World War, according to the listing, operating close to the front lines in some of the most pivotal battles of the conflict. It is now based at a private airstrip near Abingdon and is offered for sale at £75,000. An ultramarathon runner has completed a gruelling 270-kilometre race to raise thousands of pounds for charity. Leslie Malik, a PE teacher at Marlborough School in Woodstock, took on the challenge in the Sahara Desert. She completed the legendary Marathon des Sables, a seven-day ultramarathon across the Sahara, raising £5,600 for Oxford Hospital's charity and Seesaw Grief Support. Ms. Malik said, "This race was brilliant and brutal in equal measure, but I had the most incredible experience. I fundraised for Seesaw when I ran my very first marathon in 2017 and later helped to raise money for the Oxford Children's Hospital during our Big Gethin run. Their impact is real, lasting and close to home. Most importantly, fundraising for two charities that mean so much made every step worthwhile. Knowing it will help young people and families through difficult times kept me going. Known as one of the toughest foot races on earth, the Marathon des Sables covers sand dunes and rocky terrain. Runners must carry all their food, kit, and survival essentials on their backs." Ms. Malik dedicated her challenge to Gethin and Zach, two former students at Marlborough School, and trained specifically for the punishing desert environment. She said, "It's not just about pounding the pavement. It's about conditioning my body to run on sand, training with a weighted pack, and preparing for the brutal heat. I met incredible people along the way who helped me through the toughest moments, and I'm so grateful for the support that got me to the start line ready, and to everyone who cheered me on." Claire Hughes from Oxford Hospital's charity congratulated Ms. Malik on her achievement. She said, "Huge congratulations to Leslie. We're in awe of her amazing achievement and incredibly grateful for the outstanding amount she has raised for both charities." Liv Webster, communications officer at Seesaw Grief Support, also praised Ms. Malik for raising both funds and awareness. Ms. Malik described the experience as life-changing. She added, "This is an experience that will stay with me for the rest of my life." Prince William visited the county to meet staff at a motor racing team and delighted his hosts by joking about his height. Arriving at the headquarters of the British Formula E team in Kidlington, the Prince of Wales met drivers and engineers. The Prince was greeted at the Jaguar TCS racing site by Antonio Felix da Costa, the 2020 FE World Champion, who offered him the chance to sit behind the wheel of a development car identical to the team's current model. "There's not a lot of room for the legs, is there?" joked Prince William, who stands at 6'3", as he settled into the car. Da Costa talked the Prince through what it is like to race the car, as well as its equipment and features. Before getting out of the car, the prince thanked the sportsman, adding, "That's fantastic." Prince William, who is known to have an interest in the environment, appeared enthusiastic and engaged as he asked questions about the sustainability aspect of FE, something he described as incredible, and told engineers they're doing very well. He wished the team luck ahead of their races in Berlin next month and said, "I'm very excited to see you racing. I'm going to cheer you guys on." Meeting young engineers who had completed a graduate program with Jaguar TCS Racing, the prince told them he'd joked with their colleagues earlier that with so many innovations in the sport, at what point does the driver become the weak link? He added, "At what point do we think we'll get rid of drivers and get an AI person in? We're probably not far off that, are we?" Speaking to 22-year-old graduate Phoebe Russell, the prince remarked that motorsport is not necessarily the first thing women would think about joining. He then asked, "Was it easy for you to find your way into this work?" Ms. Russell replied, "Not at all," adding that she grew up with the sport, and speaking after the visit, she said, "Being asked to do a little career talk was very exciting. The fact that he had so much awareness of the sport and so much interest, and it ties into his whole sustainability project, it was very interesting." Jack Lambert, head of technical integration at Jaguar TCS Racing, who gave the prince a tour of the premises, was delighted with the visit. "Having that level of interest makes the conversation so much easier, and it allows our guys, who maybe don't do this on a regular basis, to have a really nice conversation about what they do and what they're passionate about. That's where the magic comes out." Sir David and Lady Victoria Beckham have won their latest planning battle to light up their love island at their West Oxfordshire home. The celebrity couple was granted planning permission back in 2020 for a kidney-shaped pond in the sprawling gardens of their home. But approval was only given with extremely specific conditions to ensure it would sit well within its rural context. Concern had previously been raised that the Beckhams had overstepped the planning consent when the pond and a private beach appeared in a Netflix documentary. A fresh planning application has now been approved to satisfy two conditions laid out when the Beckhams were later granted permission for the enlargement of the approved pond and inclusion of an island. The Beckhams, who have previously been accused of drip-feeding applications, are now seeking additional planning permission to build an extra section of driveway within their garden. They want to link their driveway to a recently approved new access road from Leadwell Lane that was built to avoid having to use a single-lane cul-de-sac described as the sole access to Soho Farmhouse. The couple were told that before the site comes into use, details of external lighting must be submitted and approved in writing by the local planning authority. They had to show the type and location of the lighting so that it could be clearly demonstrated that light spillage into wildlife corridors will be minimised as much as possible. This was to protect foraging and commuting bats, the report added. The second condition the Beckhams have now been given permission to discharge is the requirement to submit a comprehensive landscape scheme. The council added the scheme must show details of all planting areas, tree and plant species, numbers and planting sizes. A decision on the application was made by West Oxfordshire Council earlier this month. Popular Clarkson's Farm star Lisa Hogan is set to present a brand new ITV dating show on TV. The 51-year-old Irish former model and actress is Jeremy Clarkson's girlfriend and helps to run the 1,000-acre Diddley Squat Farm in Chadlington, Oxfordshire. Ms. Hogan has become a fan favourite for her no-nonsense approach on the hit series. She previously appeared in films including Fierce Creatures, before stepping back from acting to raise her three children. The 51-year-old joined Mr. Clarkson on the Prime Video show when it launched in 2021 and has since taken on a leading role in the farm shop. announced on ITV's This Morning, her new show, Farming for Love, will see her play Cupid for four single farmers from across the UK who are hoping to find a partner to share both their lives and livelihoods. Viewers were introduced to beef farmer Guy from Wiltshire, North Yorkshire widower Chris, 24-year-old dairy farmer Dana, and Welsh farmer George, who is on the hunt for a date to his best friend's wedding. Hogan urged potential contestants, all their friends and family, to apply if they fancy trading city life for the countryside, saying many farmers struggle to meet someone who understands the demands of the job. Ms. Hogan will continue to appear on Clarkson's Farm, with the first episodes of the new series 5 due to be released on June the 3rd. A celebrated figure from history has been seen strolling through the present-day Oxfordshire in unexpected style. Sir John Vanbrugh, the English Baroque architect behind Blenheim Palace, was recently spotted navigating the streets of Woodstock, crossing at traffic lights, carrying shopping, and pausing for a coffee. The surprise appearance marked the extension of Blenheim Palace's Blueprints of Power exhibition, which explores the life and legacy of Sir John, the rock star of the English Baroque. A spokesman said, visitors will now have until May the 31st, 2026, to explore the interactive exhibition, which brings Vanbrugh's architectural brilliance to life. The display traces Mr. Vanbrugh's journey from playwright to architect and delves into his partnership with Sarah Churchill, the first Duchess of Marlborough. Oxford University is set to show a rare Magna Carta engrossment to the public for free this year. This spring and summer, Oriel College will give members of the public access to its heritage site, and visitors at events will be able to view treasures from the college's archives. In celebration of its 700th anniversary this year, Oriel will hold three Inspiration Day events in May and June. Tickets are free for members of the public and include admission to academic talks, tours of the college, viewings of archival items, and visitors can also book lunch in the college's hall. The talks will cover a range of subjects, from the nature of space-time and the science of ageing to distraction and the role of creativity in the age of AI. A rare engrossment of Magna Carta dating from the year 1300 will also be on display at the events. The world-famous charter has been in the possession of the college since its foundation 700 years ago. Visitors at Inspiration Days will also be among the first to see a new exhibition opening at Oriel College about notable figures from its history, including Nobel laureates, Olympic medalists, and saints. Oriel College Provost Lord Mendoza said, "The governing body of Oriel is thrilled to open our historic doors to everyone to celebrate Oriel's 700th anniversary." A controversial multi-million-pound development in Oxford opened its doors to the public with a jam-packed programme of events. The newly completed Schwarzman Centre for the Humanities at the Radcliffe Observatory Quarter, ROQ, celebrated the opening with a programme of free public events. The £185 million project has faced controversy due to its funding coming primarily from Stephen A. Schwarzman, the billionaire CEO of Blackstone Inc. This company is the world's largest alternative investment firm. Mr. Schwarzman donated the largest share of the funding, making his donation the largest single gift in Oxford's modern history. The new building sits on a site already rich in history, linked to philanthropy. The plot was formerly the location of the Radcliffe Hospital, which operated from 1770 to 2007. It was made redundant following the opening of the larger John Radcliffe Hospital and was sold in March 2003. The ROQ has even older historical roots, as archaeological research between 2009 and 2010 uncovered Bronze Age and Neolithic burial grounds stretching across the site and towards university parks. Further research in 2013 and 2014 revealed a total of 348 pauper's graves dating from the 17th and 18th centuries beneath the current Blavatnik School of Government. The cause of death from these graves includes train crash and printing press injuries, as well as a small number of medical teaching cadavers. The Schwarzman Centre plans to honour this rich history through information boards in the gardens. The new centre itself includes impressive public performance spaces, such as the energy-efficient 500-seat Soman Concert Hall. This state-of-the-art concert hall comes with flexible acoustics. The centre includes a 250-seat theatre, black box immersive performance space, a white box exhibition gallery, a dance studio, cinema, museum, cafe and bar, all set in landscaped gardens. The opening celebration offered free performances and events, including cabaret, poetry and spoken word performances, and local physical theatre. Following the public opening, the centre will roll out its extensive cultural programme of events, exhibitions and performances, starting on May the 5th.
It was 40 years ago that Oxford United created history by winning the Milk Cup at Wembley. They lifted the trophy with a magnificent 3-0 victory over Queen's Park Rangers on April the 20th, 1986. The Oxford Mail reported more than 90,000 spectators, plus many, many more watching on TV, saw the little club take Wembley by storm. They didn't just beat Rangers, they humiliated them into submission. After a slow, tense start, United took control and finished so embarrassingly ahead that Rangers might not have been there. United's performance was a credit to the players, manager Maurice Evans and his staff, the fantastic Oxford fans, but more importantly, a credit to football. It was the biggest Wembley victory in the competition. The two clubs were in the first division in the 1985-6 season and both entered the Milk Cup, known as such for sponsorship reasons, in the second round. Oxford's triumphant run began with a 4-1 aggregate win over two games against Northampton Town. That was followed by a 3-1 home win over Newcastle United, cup holders Norwich City and Portsmouth in the third, fourth and fifth rounds, victories that set up a two-leg semi-final against Aston Villa. The first game ended in a 2-2 draw, but Oxford clinched a 2-1 victory in the second to claim their place in the Wembley final. Oxford had never previously progressed past the quarter-finals in the competition. The Mail report continued, as the game began, a huge yellow balloon wafted across the pitch. Was this meant to signify United's hopes of Wembley glory floating away? Not so. After 40 minutes, Trevor Hebbard, who won the Man of the Match award, gave United the lead, and second-half goals from Ray Houghton and Jeremy Charles sent the fans jubilantly back up the M40 to begin the biggest celebrations this city has ever seen. The victory could not have been better, with United playing a flowing brand of football which deserved to grace the famous Wembley turf. United's opener was a credit to Hebbard, who slotted home into the bottom left-hand corner from an acute angle. Before the goal, United fans had been chanting, "We're gonna score in a minute." They were right, but even the most fanatical supporters could not have imagined United playing such beautiful second-half football to take the cup back to Oxford. They simply ran the show, and 7 minutes after the break came the best goal of the game. Hebbard fed Houghton, took the return and set up Houghton for a quite brilliant goal. With Hebbard finding so much space in the middle, it was only a matter of time before United added another. With 4 minutes left, United completed the rout. John Aldridge combined with Hebbard before shooting from the right. Rangers goalkeeper Barron couldn't hold the shot, and there was Charles to slot home. The whistle heralded the predictable moving scenes.
After starring at Wembley in Oxford United's greatest triumph 40 years ago, Les Phillips is now looking after the sports pitches at a private school. Monday this week marked 40 years since the Ewes beat Queen's Park Rangers 3-0 in the Milk Cup final, with Mr. Phillips starring in midfield. When his playing career came to an end, Mr. Phillips trained as a greenkeeper at golf courses across Oxfordshire, and he's been at Cokethorpe School near Whitney for the last 9 years. The school was awarded the Grounds Team of the Year 2026 by the Independent Schools Football Association, an accolade which recognises the work required to maintain the 150-acre site, including 9 grass rugby and football pitches, 3 cricket squares, 6 golf greens, 2 artificial sports pitches and tennis courts. Working alongside head groundsman Simon Hole, Mr. Phillips said, "I take pride in maintaining the pitches and helping to inspire the youngsters to get involved and play a variety of sports." Almost 40 community teams across Oxfordshire also use the pitches. Since moving to the county to join the Yellows from Birmingham City, London-born Mr. Phillips added, "I came to Oxfordshire when I was 21 and I've been here ever since. I'm 63 now. It's a lovely place to live and work." The career highlight of Mr. Phillips' playing days is undoubtedly the Milk Cup triumph. The former player, who scored in the second leg of the semi-final victory against Aston Villa, said, "It's a day I'll never forget. Walking out at Wembley in our suits before the game, we just wanted to get on the pitch and get started. It was a great result and a great performance."
That was the last of the news items. But before this Oxtalk edition finishes, here is a recording by David Brassington about Alan Bennett, who will celebrate his 92nd birthday next week on May 9th.
An extract from Alan Bennett's diary from May 2024, when he turns 90 years old. Read by David Brassington.
6th of May. Bank holiday Monday. Lovely thing today. Annabelle phoned to say they would like to ring a peal of bells on Thursday in celebration of my birthday. This is so unexpected, I don't quite burst into tears, but certainly cry, which I've seldom done before, if ever, from pleasure. We know the bell rings a bit from our evening walk, which sometimes takes us, just, to the churchyard on a Monday evening, their practice day, where we sit on the bench. But I rejoice in the compliment, and what's more, don't intend to be modest about it. 9th of May. The great day dawns rather early than perhaps we would have chosen, as the celebratory peal of bells kicks off at 10:30. Hearing it get started, I open the front door and sit on a chair to listen, greeting one or two local people who pass, some bringing cards, so that by the time we struggle up to the churchyard, it's nearly 11. And it is a struggle, with some rests en route, sitting on the wall in the sun. Then we get to the bench, where I sit on a blanket under the tremendous noise. In the church, the ringers are in the glass-fronted chamber under the tower. They finish ringing and come out, and I say how touched I am. We all have our photographs taken. It's a lovely warm day, with the birds varied and deafening, my stomach on the edge, but not so much as to dampen my spirits. Loads of cards. After the bell ringing, some cows come stampeding up the village street. I momentarily think they've been roped in as part of the celebrations, but they've just got out, oblivious of the day's significance. And when I think there's nothing else to look forward to, Andy appears at Leeds Station with a card from our regular wheelchair helpers, the assistance team, Andy, Andrew and Ian. Immensely touched by this. Encomium in the mail from Craig Brown. Telephone messages from Alison Steadman and many more. And repeats on the TV tonight, though as always, very late. As I think I've noted elsewhere, 90 is not a goal, though I'll save the cards as evidence of the affection in which I seem to be held. 19th of May. 90 may not be without consequence, but nor does it have much consequence. Some effects of ageing not without interest. Cataracts, for instance, which are not ready to be removed, but which meanwhile etch the world in a jigsaw of lines. In her last years, Thora Hurd would often claim to have company, while at the same time knowing that no one was there. Scotty, her long-dead husband, for instance. She didn't let anyone, or herself, think that this meant she was due lally. A good job she wasn't living in the 17th century, when it might have got her burned.
That was the last of our articles for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Oxtalk, you can telephone Margaret on 07496 062280. That's 07496 062280. Please remember to leave your name and contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from previous weeks are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. You can also listen on an Alexa device through the Talking Newspaper skill. If you need advice on this, please phone the main Oxtalk number. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next Tuesday with more news, so until then, we hope you have a good week.
Notice to listeners of Oxtalk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to Oxtalk using Alexa. To listen to Oxtalk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to Oxtalk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to Oxtalk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Oxtalk and we will try to help.